You know that saying, money makes the world go round? That's wrong. STEM makes the world go round. What runs the world? What allows us to be doing this podcast right now? What literally everything that you use developed by one of those aspects: science, technology, engineering, math. And it is both incredibly fulfilling for yourself because you're learning so many things with literally any field in science.
Welcome, welcome all to this special episode of the Why to How podcast, where we explore adventures in STEM. After an absolutely incredible virtual Candlewide Science Fair a few weeks ago, it was clear that you all wanted to hear more from our Platinum and Best Award winners. So over the next few weeks, I'll be catching up with them all to learn about their science fair projects and the adventures they've had along the way. Today, I'm joined by Timothy Kai, a grade 11 student from South Fraser and our senior Platinum Innovation Award winner at Candlewide Science Fair 2021 for his project, An Investigation into Active Control for Accessible Orbital Flight. I've got plenty of questions and I asked our wonderful community for question suggestions as well. So without further delay, let's get into it. Timothy, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Stuart.
Of course, of course. So, do you want to start us off by introducing yourself a little bit and briefly explaining what your project was about?
Yeah, so, Stuart, you've done a lot of that for me, but, like, my name's Timothy. I'm from Surrey, BC, and I like rockets. I really like rockets. And so, my project was about miniaturizing active control, which I can explain probably a bit later, but it's a technology in big rockets that allow them to be extremely precise and reliable. And it's simply a way to keep the rocket stable, keep it upright. And I found ways to miniaturize that and use commercially available parts to make it work.
Cool, okay, so many questions. I'm super excited. Rockets are incredible, love it. So first up, tell me, where did your idea come from? Like, why this?
Okay, so starting when I was born.
Oh, okay, good.
Not that far
I
back.
Love it.
Not that far back. But I've always been interested in space. So I started my passion in space in around grade 3, where I had to write a speech for a similar science fair, but it was school wide, and I wrote a 27-page speech on Jupiter, on Saturn, and so that's where my love of astronomy was born, love of anything to do with space. And so, like any other kid, right, I'm sure we all wanted to be astronauts one day. And yep. I'm like, I want to be an astronaut, but I found out that becoming one is inordinately hard. It's, you have to be the fittest of fittest, and you have to be the smartest of the smart. So I'm neither of those things, so I decided...
Why would you say that? You're at least one of those two things.
Thanks. But I decided to pursue like a career path that's a little bit more realistic. And so I wanted to be an astronomer, found out that astronomer was, oh my gosh, it's so much math. Not for me. And then I wanted to be a little more hands-on. So I suppose engineering presented itself as a good path for me. And in the past few years, I've been dealing a little bit more into rocketry because that's, you know, big flaming 17-story talls, like, into the sky. Incredible. So I wanted to get more into that side of things. And so last year I bought off Craigslist this like $40 box of like rocket engines and rocket parts. And so I flew them so I flew it in the local park. And so that was cool, and I started a club at school for it, and that kind of fizzled though. But so over the summer, about almost a year ago, last year in August, I decided, hey, I should actually do something. I should actually do something that's a little bit more involved. Rather than, you know, putting together a cardboard tube and fins and like setting it off, I want to do something that's a little bit more advanced, a little bit more involved. So in the past year, so starting in January of 2020, there was this program called the Starship program. It's run by SpaceX. It's this experimental rocket that they've been testing. It's flying up and down. And so in the earlier flights, you can see this thing called thrust vector control working, where there was an engine at the bottom of the rocket, and it's moving to redirect thrust and to keep the rocket upright. And so that's what sparked this interest, and I decided to try and see if I could do something like that.
I must say, only a Canada-wide Science Fair award winner would possibly say that rocket science is a more realistic career path than anything else. It's not like there's that saying, you know, it's not as hard as rocket science or anything, but sure. So then I guess the next question is, why did you choose to focus on active control then?
Because honestly, it's the least explored part of miniaturization in rockets, because it's not like massive amateur rockets haven't been done before. Like, for example, the Go Fast rocket in 2009 flew to the edge of space, and that was very cool and all, but it did it in about, like, 30 seconds. So, the thing is that thin rockets, like the ones that we build in kits, are very, very basic, and they're very cheap. And honestly, you can scale that up. You can scale that way up to that taken to the extremes is NASA's Black Brant. So that is a huge finned rocket that also has a massive motor in it. And it's used for sounding rocket flights, where you do an experimental flight up and just fall straight down. So that gives you about, I think at most 20 minutes of zero G, which you can't get anywhere else. But that aside, it's not very useful when it comes to satellite payloads. And that's what my project focuses on, because there's this kind of satellite called SmallSats, and they're becoming more prominent in the university and researcher circles. But problem is, as you can know, getting a grant is not very easy. And the $1 million minimum that it costs to fly on a Falcon 9 is unrealistic for pretty much everyone. So I wanted to develop something a little bit more realistic. And because huge fin rockets that can fly to space already exist, I wanted to make them as reliable and as stable, keyword, as those big industry rockets like the Falcon 9 or Delta IV Heavy. And that secret is thrust vector control.
And so, perfect segue into the next question then. How did you learn about thrust vector control? I imagine it's not it doesn't form part of your high school education. So where did you find this information? How did you figure out what you needed to know?
Oh man, there are a lot of, so first of all, there are some very smart people on some online communities who specialize in rockets. So they're amateur rocketeers, and they've been doing this for years. And so they've developed like a workflow for certain things, like the electronics. Yeah. Because across all rockets of this size, you need to have a payload bay, you need to have parachutes, recovery systems, and you also need to have like a way to hold your motor in place, right? And so that's where I got my information to build one of these things.
Nice.
This is the flight computer. This is the heart of the rocket. It's actually more like the brain of the rocket. But yeah. So electronics basics came from that. Honestly, most of my rockets basics came from that. But concerning the actual systems that make thrust vector control work, it was a lot of reading. There was a lot of reading through papers. Two of them in particular. One of them was called the Magic Paper, which was very important in helping me understand orientation systems. And the other one was just space shuttle documents. So Space Shuttle was like a very special rocket, because its thrust vector control kept it going kind of like on a like trajectory that's not straight up, because it has engines pointing out the back. And so that's, you can see when the Space Shuttle locks, you can see like the three engines at the back, the RS-25 is just tilting together, locking. And I read up on that. I read up into its orientation system, which I mentioned before. It's called Quaternions. I can explain that in a little bit more detail later if you want. In the end, it was honestly just learning the basics of engineering, looking at industry examples of source control, the technology itself, and then just letting me go at it, learning how to engineer, building new designs. I have an entire box just full of like old gimbals. But the harder, honestly, the hardest part, like that was like 50% of the work. The other hard part, it was getting all of the required surrounding like code and electronics and hardware that makes the thrust vector control work. So yeah.
So, had you ever done computer assisted design before? Have you ever soldered before? Like, have you ever built anything similar to this before you sort of jumped head first into trying to miniaturize what is a multi-billion dollar industry?
So first of all, shout out to Mr. Mills and Mr. Roche for teaching me how to solder in grade 9.
Nice.
I took woodwork and electronics in there, and I soldered together this little breadboard thing, this little protoboard thing, where it screams when you put it under your parents' bed. Yeah, that was my first electronics project. Before that, I had two bad experiences in my lifetime with both Arduino and coding. And so I was off put by that until literally when I started this project. The last time I coded was a block code on like Vex robots. And so I just jumped headfirst into this essentially. I learned this from scratch. I have never designed one of these before. I know how electronics work in theory because of, certain physics principles and whatever, but I've never actually formally designed a PCB. And so I learned how to do that through, the glory of YouTube. But also, there are some other programs that I had to learn, like CAD, which is computer assisted design. It's not very assisted at all, but for example, just like the mounting rings on this, right? I modeled these, so you have to model them before 3D printing them, which brings me to 3D printing, which is also another nightmare in of itself, where you have to, do upkeep on the printer itself all day long, and then certain things go wrong. And then finally there was the code, where I had to learn a couple of things, which was number one, control theory, which is, as you can imagine, you can't write like one line of code to make this work. There's
What?
code.
You can't just
Yeah,
rocket
well,
fly.
it's if launch, fly.
Yeah.
Technically, you can because the code's written in C++, so you can write it in one line, but that'd be unreadable. So there's code to make this part. There's code that's loaded on this to make this part run. There's code to take the information from this part, calculate it, turn it into like a value to turn the thrust vector control mounts, and all of that is done through some very nasty math.
And you didn't want to become an astronomer because you didn't like math.
Yeah, it turns out that engineering is not that forgiving either.
No,
I
it's
had to learn calculus for this project, alongside C++ and Python.
So just a few things. Yeah.
No, just a few things,
Nice and
yeah.
easy, of course. So what did you discover? What is the result of all of this work of learning CAD, of learning soldering, of learning math? Of learning Python and 3D printing. What's the
Engineering is a massive pain.
end?
Rocket science is as hard as it sounds.
Yep.
Also, it works. So thrust vector control does indeed work at the miniaturized scale. So in my flights, there were several problems that came up. There were launch detect was a bit low. I set it at 15 G's, which only like the there's a so the motor that I'm using, sorry. Do I have one around here? Yeah, I do. Yeah. So the motor that I'm using is this big, and it produces 12 newtons of thrust nominally, but it spikes at 25 newtons. So this thing essentially pushes really hard at the start, and then it settles down. So that push hard at the start is what I use to detect liftoff. And so that was too low. So it spikes up, and at the top of the spike, I was already about a meter and a half off the pad, tilted sideways. And then the thrust vector control system was like, oh, I need to be doing something. And then it woke up and it started working. And so the flight after that was perfectly straight, 30 degrees off axis. No. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. But that was my first ever flight. Second. The first one was embarrassing because it was human error, not computer error. I was launching at like 9 o'clock, and given that it's Canada in the winter, it was very dark, and I forgot to turn the rocket on.
Oh. Wait, that's, that's kind of important.
I didn't flip the switch that needs to turn the rocket on. I did flip it the first time. The thing wouldn't light, so I had to turn it off because certain problems with like the gyroscope that I'm using, it drifts, and I don't want to like, you know, fill up the buffer on the SD card, on the flash chips before I dump the SD card and all that. So I turned it off, reset up the launch system, made sure it works. Then I forgot to turn it back on when I pressed the button. So I devised a temporary solution to that, which was a launch procedure. So this kind of pattern continued on until my second latest flight, which was essentially 100% successful, except for the fact that my motor underperformed and it came like 3 meters off the pad and it hovered. It was perfectly straight, but it hovered instead of going up.
That's pretty cool.
But anyways, that's all of those flights and all the data that I got from those flights confirms that thrust vector control does work at this scale, which is honestly really, really cool.
That's super cool, yeah. And I mean, just even seeing your smile right now, like I can tell just how passionate you are about this. Can you describe that feeling for you? It's maybe not the first flight, like the second flight when it does take off, and then the third flight especially where you know that it's gone right. Like, what does that feel like for you?
Oh gosh, it's literal months of work paying off. So iterative design is the methodology I'm using. It's one used by NASA scientists, and it's in particular SpaceX actually, and it's essentially build, test, fail, fix, build, test, fail, fix. And man, when you've gone through so many of those cycles, like not just the big flight cycles, right? Those are the big ones that are the most easy to explain. But I had to reprint these rings, for example, 3 times before I got the spacing right to fit the tube. That's one thing. And there's the tolerances for the thrust vector control, and there's the code. There's, oh my gosh, there's so many parts of the code. There's the quaternions that weren't working. There's the PID that wasn't working. There's funny servo offsets. And then so iteratively designing through each little subsystem, each little part, you get stuck into this like little like personal hell of your own making because you're just grinding away at it every day. But like honestly, sometimes it's just so fun because you get these little rushes when you finally finish a cycle and wait, it's working. And it's working. And so that's an incredible excitement. And then now imagine that, the fear and apprehension when you start testing, and the relief and excitement and happiness when you stop and see the results. Imagine that multiplied by 1,000 times, because this is months of work. This is a solo project, so nobody else really knows what I'm doing, knew what I was doing back then, and nobody could understand, honestly, the excitement or the pain. On flight days, I was a nervous wreck, so I needed that procedure to keep me in check. And so, before the flight, I'm pale, I'm sweating, and I'm praying. Typically, I'm just figuratively and almost literally over the moon. It's it's great when you see that thing just go like soaring up to the sky. You hear that familiar. As it goes up, it's great. It's undescribable. So people need to work on something of that scale. Just work on something that they enjoy and they're passionate about, and they have to push through, work on it for a year, and see the results, both of the actual project and of your own growth.
It's truly such an amazing mentality that you have, where you intentionally put yourself through pain to achieve some sort of greatness at the end, you know? Like, just to achieve that rush of satisfaction of knowing you've achieved something. it's very similar to like any sort of sport or athletics, where like it hurts to train all the time. It hurts to go home and work on something so specific for hours and hours and hours, not knowing if it's going to work at the end. But then as soon as it does, there's just no other feeling like it.
Exactly.
How big is this park that you're testing your rockets in?
Oh, I think on Google Maps it says something like 400 by 200 meters.
And how high are these rockets going?
So honestly, it was a little bit more dangerous when I was messing around with my like model rockets, because those are light. They're like maybe like 30-50 grams a piece, and they've got these little. I think I have one actually. Just a second.
I think, Timmy, you must have one of the coolest desks around. Scattered pieces of rockets.
It's and... right there. It is the coolest desk around. It is the messiest desk around. But, yeah. If you want to know about this, this is currently what I'm working on. It is a reaction control wheel for the rocket. This is a LiPo that I bought that was about 10 times too big for my needs. But it works for now. And I've got this some electronic setup to spin a brushless motor, and some code written to control it. And
so what's the purpose of that? Like, so what are you hoping to achieve?
My thrust vector control system does yaw and pitch, right? So this way and that way, it's all good. However, when it comes to roll rates on the higher power flights that I'm planning to do soon, any irregularities in the airframe will cause it to roll, and although my software can compensate for that because quaternions are really really cool, but there are hardware limitations that I can't bypass without spending a lot of money, and so my servos are limited to 0.15 like they have a delay of 0.15 seconds. As well as the fact that their actuation speed is about 360 degrees per minute. So once your rotation rate exceeds that, you can't do anything about it. And it exceeds it way before that because your like delay is going to mess things up even harder. And so I need to do something to prevent it from rolling on this axis, to prevent it from spinning. And so due to a little thing called the conservation of angular momentum, you can spin something really fast inside it to make the rocket spin the other way around. And so, essentially, that's what I'm doing. This is a motor, if you can't see. And it spins. And it spins really, really fast. And so, yeah. So,
nice.
Right, back to the park thing. They were flying on these motors, which were a lot smaller. But this would take it up to, like almost 100 meters or so. So it was really high and really fast. So, again, that's what I told you about finned rockets, right? Finned rockets are stabilized by their fins, which means the air drag that hits those fins essentially pulls it upright. And so it needs to go really, really fast. And so it hits that 100 meters in about 1.5 seconds. And so, yeah, it's insane. So that was a little bit more dangerous, actually. These rockets, although they're flying on bigger, more powerful motors, they get up to 15 meters at max on this size of motor. And because my whole rocket weighs about 800 grams, which is about 20 times more than my little ones. So, yeah, this big rocket means less height, means less danger. So, yeah, I usually launch in the morning, like really early in the morning. So there's like less people, typically zero. Yeah.
Nah. So I bet you're pretty well known around the neighborhood, though. What are your neighbors thinking? Like, curious bystanders, do they ever come up to you to ask you what you're doing?
I usually have to tell like bystanders to hit you because I don't want to hit them. So there's a safety zone, right? There's a rule of thumb is 1.5 times your maximum apogee, which in this case would is like 20 meters for me. So my safety zone is about 20 meters, and I typically extend it to about 25, because my little brother nearly got hit once. I think I mentioned this on the winners panel, but that first flight, where the rocket did not turn on, and it went in a parabolic trajectory, It went straight for my brother.
Yeah.
I have a video of it. It just went, like, it headed straight for him. It landed about a meter ahead of him, and then it exploded. It literally exploded. You see, if you see this, it's visible all the way through, right? There is an ejection charge at the top of this.
Yep.
So it goes boom when it finishes flying. So it serves a couple of purposes. You can find it easier in the dark. It can scare the crap out of your little brother. All kinds of things. It's great. But honestly, the park is kind of far away from my house, so none of the people there know me. I'm probably just the menace who launches like loud things in the morning. But
Yeah.
Some people, I sometimes tell kids who are like playing in the park about my project, but honestly, very little public involvement for me.
And what about like friends and family? Are they invested in this project just along with you? Like, do they celebrate your successes? Okay. How do you explain to them why you need to 3D print more things and why you need to go home and play on the computer? And
yeah. My friends were like, oh, bro, you're talking about rockets again. it's like when we're like talking about, like when they're gossiping or whatever, it's like, oh, relationship this, relationship that. What about Timothy? Oh, rockets. That's it. So
that's a love, man.
It's kind of consumed by reputation. But honestly, it's been great. So no regrets.
No, good. And that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, my friends are interested as well, but some of them want to come to my like launches, but them being experimental and me being, what I said, a nervous wreck before launches, I've been a little apprehensive from inviting them to don't want them waiting around either, you know? So
yeah, I think that's definitely understandable. Absolutely. So then moving back to Science Fair, I guess, what's your favorite part about Science Fair? What keeps you coming back every year?
Actually, this was my first year in a science fair. So, last year I wanted to join. I designed this solar still thing. It was pretty cool. Fun fact, the parts that I ordered for it are still at the border because of the lockdown.
Oh, love it. Yeah.
But that kind of fizzled because CWSF was canceled last year. And I wasn't that into like the science community in grade 8, and in grade 9 I was only doing like regional like little competitions like the KPUSC and that kind of thing. And so last year I got in touch with one of CWS's former alumni, or however you pronounce that word, but he was really cool. Winner in 2015 or something, but really inspired me to get into this because it looked like a really great opportunity, and it was. And so I entered the regional fair this year, somehow got past that, and then got to CWSF, and then by some stroke of luck and miracle, here I am. Oh man.
I don't think it's a stroke of luck or a miracle. From the sounds of it, you've put in an incredible amount of effort. You've done something truly innovative, that's for sure. I mean, I can't even imagine how complicated it must be. You make it sound easy, and I know rocket science is not easy at all, but there's a lot that's gone into making something fly up straight and actually have some sort of control over it.
Yeah, but also, you consider that a lot of other people, literally everybody who makes it to CWSF, has done equivalent amounts of work and put as much as time, or even more than I have, into their projects as well. So I still consider myself extremely lucky.
It's a good mentality to have. So why should other students be doing science fair projects, especially when there are so many other things that keep teenagers busy already?
I mean, like, where else are you going to do something this meaningful or this impactful, right? It's like, oh, my friends are cranking 90s in Fortnite or whatever the phrase is. Or some of them are, say, platinum in League of Legends or whatever. Are those really, those are fulfilling for a short time, right? Playing games with your friends is great. But if you really want some long-term satisfaction, in my opinion, science fairs are the best way to go about it. You really don't have opportunities to do this as a high schooler, except for at one of these fairs. It's a good excuse to do something that you love, to work on something that makes you happy, and it also has a great payoff at the end.
Yes, it does.
But that's honestly a bonus. It's the process.
It's definitely the journey, isn't it? The adventure, as we say on the podcast, the adventure in STEM. Just, you know, a little nod to our tagline. So what comes next? Are you going to start building bigger rockets? I mean, obviously, you've got the airbrush motor, hoping to minimize the amount of rotation of your current rocket. But what comes after that?
Man, I need to get this thing flying high and straight. Mm-hmm. And after that, I am seeing if I can get a L1 certification, mm-hmm. which means I can fly with rocket engines not this big, but like
this big. Yeah.
And so that'd be really cool. I have to change places where I launch because that thing's probably going to go up to a kilometer or more.
Ooh.
And so,
because
my project is about scalability and it's about, you know, affordability at this scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to pursue all of those goals at the same time. But as a side project, because I think that you cannot get a L1 cert until you are 18.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, I'm going to, first of all, buy the legal, like the biggest legal motor I'm allowed to buy. Actually, I think I have some in here.
Oh, man. Imagine Timothy being your kid.
These are massive, by the way. These are...
As big as your hand, yeah.
Yeah, they're huge. So I'm going to fly with those. As those are F-15 motors, and maybe pursue a landing program.
Mm-hmm.
Vertical landing with one of these.
So you're basically trying to become Elon Musk of the miniature rocket world.
Please.
I mean, that's a goal. That's definitely something to aim for. Wow.
Mm.
Wow. Okay. a couple of community questions for you. Someone asked, when can we all go to space? What do you mean?
Not
you
on one of these. Not on one of these, unless you weigh like 10 kilos.
What about when can we launch our own sat cubes?
Oh, that's honestly right now. Like, you want to build a satellite?
$1 million, though.
Yeah. You can band together with like several universities, and there's rideshare programs that allow you to kind of book an entire rocket, but you mm-hmm. just have to find like 100 different people to, you know, put their satellites on it. And Electron, the Electron rocket from Rocket Lab, is becoming more and more prominent. But yeah, there's still ride sharing. They're not as dedicated as I hope. This technology can be, but right now it is possible, and with the right amount of funding, it is realistic to launch your own satellite to space. I think I know a few people who've actually done it. Actually, it's really cool.
That is really cool. Well, honestly, I can't wait to hear about that.
Yeah, satellite design is as complicated as what I'm doing here. You've got electronics, and you've even got roll control systems sometimes, actually. But yeah, the amount of design and engineering that goes into that, because you can't fly it more than once. It goes up there and it's up there forever. And so you got to do it right the first time. And that's a lot harder.
No pressure.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, for those who are interested in like doing such a thing, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Some sort of partnership I'm saying here. Another community question for you. What is your dream of being when you are older? Or what do you dream about being when you are older?
Well, an astronaut, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
That is still my ultimate goal. But realistically, I want to be an aerospace engineer, a propulsion systems engineer in particular. So I want to work on things like the RS-25. Development has ended. But the Raptor engine from SpaceX, the first full-flow Methalox engine ever. And that the kind of engineering that goes into that is incredible. And I want to be a part of it. I want to be a part of the bleeding edge of aerospace development for at least a few years of my life. And hopefully I can go to Mars.
Let's go.
Well, one day in the future, it's you know being a senior engineer at SpaceX is you get your pick of a choice when they're choosing crew members for some, you know, commercial launch to Mars in the 2060s or whatever.
I mean, that'll be upon you quicker than you think. So I mean, when you do go to Mars, if you could just take a photo, tag at yc.sjc on Instagram, that'd be amazing. Give us a good shout out. All right, so last couple of questions before we wrap up this episode. Of course, why is STEM important?
Oh, man. You know,
just an easy one to end.
Yeah. You know that saying, money makes the world go round? That's wrong. Mm-hmm. STEM makes the world go round. What runs the world? What allows us to be doing this podcast right now? What literally everything that you use developed by one of those aspects. Science, technology, engineering, math. And it is both incredibly fulfilling for yourself because you're learning so many things with literally any field in science. I've done paleobiology for fun. I learned so much about geology and how the world itself works. That ties into tectonics. That ties into like the huge periods of time that things work. That ties into evolution. That ties into, you know, how animals evolved over those millions of years. It ties into astronomy. Ties into the movement of our planets. And so STEM, science, technology, it's a big interconnected web that's more than three dimensions. It's incredible and is applicable. That's the important thing. It is applicable to every facet of our lives. And so if you get into STEM, you can contribute something to part of that. And that's what makes it.
That's a good message. That's a really good message. Okay, final question for you. Maybe it's got a few sub-questions.
Sure.
A final question for you. Any advice for people looking to get involved in Science Fair next year or just looking to do a project like this in general, even if it's not for Science Fair, just to do a big, long project?
Oh, man. Just think of something that you like to do. So it was easy for me because by nature, I love
rockets.
Love rockets. I love space. I actually am like just generally interested in any kind of science, which is a big plus when it comes to science fairs and developing projects, because I always have an idea, and it's a big minus when it comes to my social life. Joke, I have plenty of friends, it's fine. But for people who aren't, say, as like inspired, I'd say read some books, do some research, see what the world has in store. For example, some people don't know like the nuances of climate change, right? So once you get some research into that, you can see, once you understand the problem, then you can think of solutions. So find as many problems as you can, and then let your brain go at them. Discover new things, discover new techniques. Think of new ways to solve these problems. Try to think of something unique. It doesn't have to be unique, actually. That as long as you learn, as long as you can keep learning and keep on thinking, keep on innovating, that's how you really get into these projects. And you just set a goal, do something. I want to build a prototype to collect trash out of my bathtub and then out of the local pond. And just keep on going, building up. And because that's how everything in life works. You just keep on growing.
Mm-hmm. Build, test, fail, fix, repeat.
That's right.
And last sub question for you then. How do you stay motivated? Once you start, how do you keep it going?
Oh, man. So honestly, to be frank, I took a break in almost all of December because of school and because of other commitments and stuff. And also because I was burned out. You get burned out very easily on projects that you love a lot because you work. I once spent like 6 hours by accident just tuning a PID. So just cranking numbers on your screen and then you're uploading it, testing it, whatever. But if you pick the right project, motivation honestly isn't that much of a problem. You're always thinking of new things when you're at school. You're doing math and then you go, oh, I can do something with that. And then you're always thinking of something new. There's always new things that your project is bringing up for you. It's not a set path. It's not like, you know, pages and pages of homework that you just have to grind through. This process holds surprises, holds discoveries for you. But not only that, you also have to have perseverance. So this isn't some magic, oh, passion is all you need. You need to be able to sit down at a screen and learn. You need to be able to just slowly figure out things. You need to learn how to be not discouraged when you can't figure something out. So perseverance, I think, is as big a part as any project as passion is.
I think that's the perfect way to end this episode. I mean, Timothy, thank you so very much for joining us today. What an absolutely, truly incredible adventure that you've been on over the last 12 months. You know, from almost taking out your little brother to now looking to getting a license to shoot rockets up to a kilometer in the air. I mean, what a life you are living. I can't wait to see what comes next. Truly do, like, send us videos of you launching rockets, because I would definitely love to see what they look like. Rocketry is so cool to me, but I am nowhere near smart enough to understand all of the math and building that goes into it, because it is as hard as rocket science is made out to be, which is a fun lesson that you've learned. So thank you so much, Timothy. I hope to see you again very shortly. Keep us updated on everything that goes on. And for everyone else, please join us in the next episode when we interview one of our other best project and platinum award winners. And please do put your hands together, leave us some comments, let Timothy know just how much you've appreciated learning more about him and how much, or just how cool his project is. So until next time, thank you all and stay curious.